Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Chem 12, or welcome to Chem 12 for the few new people that are in here. Section 2, I'm going to be talking more about the course in lab today. We'll actually start going over the answers to the final to both review from last quarter and get us a warm-up for this quarter. And I'm only going to minimally talk about the syllabus today for the new people because I figure it makes more sense just to let you download it, read it, and then we'll cover some more in lecture and lab on Wednesday. So, in fact, I won't do enrollment here because the last time I checked, there were still spots available in Section 2. So even if there is someone on the wait list here, it looks like everybody will get into Section 2. So we'll wait to do the registration when we get to lab. What I wanted to do here today, in fact, is have our first real lecture. Now, before I did that, though, just because we do have some new people here, let me lead you a little bit around the website that I have. So the best way to get to my website instead of writing some complicated URL down is just to go to the main DeAnza website. Could we have someone turn one or two of the lights? Oh, I have them up here. Fantastic. There. Is that dark enough for the screen to be visible? But you can still see your notes. Last quarter, people like to be able to see both, so I'll remember that. Go to the main DeAnza website, then go up to faculty and staff, click on that, and then if you scroll down on the right-hand side, you can see faculty websites is one of the options under directories. So click there under the directories, find my last name, which is Gray, G-R-A-Y. There is actually another Gray here, but I don't think I look too much like a Joyce. So click on David Gray. That brings me to the main website, which we are currently in Chem 12B, of course. Now, there are three different sections of Chem 12B, just like there were three different sections of 12A last quarter. So everybody that's in here should be enrolled in either Section 1 or Section 2, and this is where you'll always come to at this time in this room for those two sections. Section 3 is a completely different section, separate exams and such. They're on a slightly different schedule, so the courses are not interchangeable with each other. And you'll see up at the top here, there's a place where they'll be able to click to access their version of this same web page. But if you click on the 12B icon that I did a moment ago, it'll bring you to this one, which is the web page for you. The course syllabus is not up yet. The schedule's already been set. Lab schedule's already been set. I'm just working on filling in some suggested homework problems. So when I finish that off this afternoon, I'll be posting that. Although for new students, if you wanted to get an idea what's in the syllabus, 95% of it's going to be identical to the one from last quarter. So if you went to the Chem 12A webpage, you could download the course syllabus that's still there. And almost every single one of those policies that was in 12A is going to apply for 12B as well. Going back to the 12B website, the other link that is currently available is something known as the course outline. So that's what we have on record officially at DeAnza for anyone that's teaching this course, and it's used to articulate this course to other institutions, which means there's agreements that this course will transfer to other institutions, and that course outline is the source of information they use to determine whether or not a course should transfer. So just in case after you leave DeAnza, you transfer somewhere else and they want more detail about the course and they don't want just my syllabus, they're probably asking for this thing here, the course outline of record. Office hours for this quarter, Monday and Wednesdays, it'll be almost right after the lab. The lab for Section 2 ends at 2:10. I'll usually grab some quick lunch from the cafeteria and then be back in my office, so be there back roughly at 2:25. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, the office hours will be in between the lecture and the lab that I have on those days, so it'll be at 10:30. And then on Fridays, I have lectures at 10:30 and 11:30, so I put the office hours at 9:30 before both of them, so in case that we have lecture or lab in either of or all three of the sections, you'd have a chance, if there's some kind of assignment on Friday, that you'd be able to ask me first. My office is room S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, 1214. So if you haven't been to the lab building yet, when you go over there later for Section 2, if you go up the big ugly staircase that's there, you turn right to go to the lab building, you turn left to go to the office complex where our faculty offices are. There's a phone there, but don't be shy about dialing that phone. The reason we have that security system is because we have computers that are not in offices. They're out in the open area, and we do have problem with theft here at De Anza from time to time, so we try to keep that door closed whenever possible just to prevent any of those computers walking away. But if you go up and dial the extension that's listed there on the outside of the door, that'll dial my office. If I'm there, I'll hit a buzzer. That'll open the door up, and you can come on in. When you go into that office complex, if you take a left, which you have to do to not run into the wall, and then just keep walking towards the parking lot, that far wall that faces, looks over the parking lot and all the honking of people trying to park today, that's right where my office is. And you'll know my office from all little sticky things on the window on the outside. Email is my last name, first name, graydavid@deanza.edu. Twitter, at Dr. Yes? At Dr. Dave Kim, that'll actually be listed on the syllabus from now on when I do update the website for the new postings, which for new people, this area here, that's where I'm going to post MP3s and PDFs. So when I post that day, I'll send a Twitter message out so you all know when to go look for the new download notes. Yes, there is a Facebook study group, which I didn't start, but that was started by Marvin Custodio and maybe a couple other people that are tutoring for the course. So I won't friend you all at the moment, but if you send me a contact message to my Facebook account, then I'll add you into the study group. Or if you know Marvin Custodio, you go to the study groups, he can add you in as well. We're both currently the two admins. It's a secret group, so it doesn't even show up on Facebook. You have to know it's there, in other words. But if you contact either me or him, then we can add you to it. The first set of assignments is already established for the quarter. So section one, here's a reminder that the pre-lab for experiment number one, which is the oxidation of cyclododecanol, is due on this Wednesday. Section two, I'll be telling you what the pre-lab involves, which isn't that much work, but you do have an assignment that's going to be due, therefore, on Wednesday. The lab report's not due till the 25th, as we're going to have a couple of days off from class. We have a holiday, in fact, on Monday of next week. And there's a conference that I'm going to be going to, so I'll be gone on Friday this next week. So you have a very, very, very short week next week. First lab quiz exam are listed there as well. First lab quiz is on February 13th. First quiz is on January 23rd. And the first exam is 3 weeks from today, the 30th. Then the final for this course, it's on the last day of finals, March 30th. It's going to be in the same room at 9:15 in the morning, not the standard 10:30 time, so make sure that you see the correct time there. Again, in this current room. And down at the bottom of the page there where you see all those dates listed, those are going to get filled in as we go along through the quarter. So the date itself, when it turns into a link, click on that, and that'll be for the MP3. As you can see, I've got microphones here recording this lecture. And then section one, you are not the lecture I'm recording because I tend to do better the second time around. So I'm going to be recording the afternoon lab lectures, but those will be posted in the lab portion. And then next to the date itself will be this little paragraph symbol, which won't be there for the lab today since we didn't do anything. Oh, no, yes, it will, because we're going to go over some answers to the finals. So even there, there'll be a little paragraph symbol. Click on that, and that will download a PDF for the written notes for that day. If you're using a PC, if you right-click on either the date or the paragraph symbol, you should have the option to download the file instead of having it automatically launch into whatever media player that you use. For those of you that don't use QuickTime as much, for those of you who are not absorbed into the iOS universe, if you're having trouble clicking on it and not playing nice with whatever media player you do have, again, if you right-click on it, usually it gives you the option to just download the file instead. Questions? Now, again, we may go more over the syllabus on Wednesday. The syllabus should be posted later tonight once I do have a chance to look through all the example problems. Our first chapter, which for the new people, let me make a comment about textbooks. Our official textbook is Bruce, I believe it's the sixth edition that we're currently using. Yes, this is what the cover looks like. If you have another textbook that you used in your previous chem course that you prefer to keep using, that's not a problem, because these problem numbers that I'm going to give you are suggested problem numbers. I don't collect homework. It's up to you to decide whether you want to do homework or not. So if you wanted to use an alternate textbook, that's perfectly fine. But in this textbook, we're going to be starting with chapter 10 on alcohols and ethers. And so, in fact, our first lecture today is going to be converting alcohols into leaving groups. A large part of last quarter was devoted to nucleophilic substitution and elimination reactions, which have alkyl halides or alkyl sulfonates as their substrates. And so we're going to learn how to make alkyl halides and alkyl sulfonates today. So again, that's chapter 10. And then you'll see the full breakdown of each topic once the syllabus has been posted. Is there anybody here from section 2 that is wanting to be on the wait list? So otherwise, everybody else is enrolled. And from section 1, at the very end of class, I'm going to ask if you all just stay still just for a moment. I forget the name without looking, but there's, is it Bora or Nora? I think it might have been Bora. Is he or she here? So at the end of class, if he or she is not here, then where is Anna? Right there. So come talk to me at the end of class. All right. Questions before we get going? Then let me give a little bit of context, a little bit of review for everybody else that forgot all their OCHEM over the break because it leaked out of your heads, or for the new people that are just coming back. So about study habits, I'm going to be coming in every day except today and asking whether or not you had read from the sections that I had signed in the text. It'd be a little unfair today since you didn't even have the syllabus posted. But once you do have the syllabus posted and you know where you're supposed to be at a particular point in the quarter, I'd expect to be able to walk in and ask anybody in here a question about the material from that section. Not that you're going to completely understand it, but I really, 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 really believe that the biggest issue in getting through this course, aside from just the sheer mass of information that you have to learn, is your own study habits of whether you bother to study each day a little bit along the way. Many people have compared chemistry to a foreign language, and if you hear something every day of your life, even if you don't know what it means at first, eventually you're going to figure out what it means. When someone's looking at you like this and going, and then saying whatever particular word they're saying, you're eventually going to figure that out. So same thing with chemistry. If you do all your studying the day before the exam, you're going to absorb that much of the material and forget half of it because you're so tired from doing the all-nighter that you're doing trying to learn everything. Whereas if you study half an hour or so every day, then even if you forget some, you've still got a much better bank of material you're carrying around in your head. And you all know from last quarter what happens, that I'll get up here and say, did you read the section? The three or four or five hands timidly go up because everybody else didn't do it, and they don't want to seem like geeks because they actually read the material. And then we get towards the first exam, though, and then people start pulling their hair out and wondering why it's so nasty of a course because you're trying to read 200 pages of material in one night, and it just doesn't work that well, does it? Because you all have been through this course, most of you. Think of the third exam, think of the final. Think of the types of problems that you had there. Now think that's what every exam this quarter is going to be like. So it's really up to you. The short version of the story is I know every step of what's going to happen this quarter from now where we're just talking about alcohols to the end of the quarter when we're talking about paracyclic reactions, the Diels-Alder reactions, and sigmatropic reactions. And I know all the steps that are in between because I was just working on it last night. So I've got all laid out in my head, and if we had a whole 2 or 3 days worth, I could just sit here and write all the course outs right now. So I know the pathway to get from here to the end of the course. Now, you can either follow what I'm telling you to do, or you could not. And I've been doing this enough years that I know I'm not the best teacher on the planet, but I got a little idea what's going on with OCHEM. So if you listen to me and do what I'm telling you to do, you got a good chance of following and staying up with me until you get to the end of the quarter. If you don't read and study, at least study every day, I'm telling you, you're going to be miserable when you get to the end of the quarter, unless you're just one of these people that magically looks at something and learns it when you see it the one time. So the one or two people in the room that can do that, you'll be fine. Everybody else, us mere mortals, you got to work at it. Right? How many reactions did you learn last quarter? Maybe 15 or so? We'll probably do that in the first 2 weeks this quarter. So, Flashcards. There are 6 pieces of information that you want to make sure that you have on flashcards, which this will be where I start writing notes down, because this is a repeat for many of you, but again, for the new people, or the people that never bothered last quarter, this is what's going to save your posteriors, quite likely. It's already presumed. Oh, I love this neat little pad here. So, flashcards. There are 6 things that in one way or another you should stick on each flashcard for each reaction that you're going to learn. What's the first one we always discussed? Something called the synthetic utility. Which means, what does the reaction do? Today's synthetic utility is going to be mostly to convert alcohols to some kind of leaving group. So we'll learn a reaction to make an alkyl bromide, an alkyl chloride, an alkyl iodide, and an alkyl sulfonate. So there's 4 reactions that you learn today. The next thing, reagents. Many times you can identify a reaction just by the unique reagents that are used in that reaction. Sometimes a reaction might have a very specific set of conditions that you have to follow as well. So for example, hydroboration oxidation. Borane is incredibly reactive to practically anything that's got a lone pair. So you can't have oxygen or water really around for a borane reaction. If you're doing bromination, there's some types of bromination where you do want light. There's some types of bromination where you can't have light. So those types of things would be listed under conditions. Probably the most important of these is mechanism, because this is a mechanism-based course. We're going to use mechanism to explain why certain things happen in reaction. 2 things in particular that we're going to use mechanism to describe are stereochemistry and stereochemistry from a couple of different perspectives. If we're talking about a chiral center, we can talk about whether the stereochemistry of that center is maintained, so whether we have retention of configuration, or does it get inverted like in an SN2 reaction, or does it get scrambled like in an SN1 reaction, which would be loss of configuration. It could also mean stereochemistry of a double bond. So if we had something like hydrogenation, where the 2 hydrogens add to the same face of the double bond, that is a syn addition. Versus if we have something like vicinal dihalide formation from Br2. One bromine adds to one face, one adds to the other, because the second one comes around and tacks from the opposite side of where the ring formed with the first bromine. That's anti-addition. That's another example of stereochemistry. Aside from stereochemistry, we also have regiochemistry. If it's a carbocation-based mechanism, that means we're likely going to have carbocation rearrangement. If we had something like oxymercuration demercuration, where we have a cation but not a carbocation, then maybe we won't have rearrangement. If we had something like elimination, you know, there's different types of double bonds you might be able to form from one substrate. So which one of those forms, that's also a regiochemical consideration. So these 6 items are what you need to know for each reaction. Now, let me pause for a moment and see if you have any questions about any of these 6 items. Then, let's go into the reactivity of alcohols. My organic chemistry teacher that I had when I was at Rice made a joke about alcohols when he first started teaching them, because he said if you were stranded on a desert island but had a full synthesis lab but only had one type of starting material, one source of carbon, what functional group, he said, would you want? If you had 5 compounds as your source of carbon for synthesis, what would they be? And he said they all five of them would be alcohols, the largest one of which he would say should be ethanol for dealing with the fact that you're stuck on an island with nothing except a synthesis lab. If you're not familiar, ethanol is the active ingredient in alcoholic beverages. But why, other than trying to make a joke, would he say that you'd want all those to be alcohols? Because you can create almost every single functional group out of an alcohol. And many functional groups, in turn, can be converted back into being alcohols. So in fact, one exercise we did and one that we may do later this quarter, our own selves, is to put an alcohol in the middle of a sheet of paper and to think of every reaction you know to convert it off into one other functional group and then trace that back with a reaction to get back to an alcohol. And again, at some point you're going to see nearly every functional group is able to do that. And so that's why alcohols are such useful starting materials. They're also commonly available from biological sources. So there are many unusual alcohols that you can get just by harvesting a plant source, for example. So part of the reason alcohols are particularly useful. Let's remind ourselves about the nomenclature of alcohols. If we have a plain, unbranched alcohol with only just one OH group on it, what is the functional group ending we use for an alcohol? All. And most of the time we have to say where the position of that functional group is, because we could very easily have an isomer, for example, where we would have the same number of carbons, but the alcohol itself at a different position. So how would I name the first compound? So there's actually two ways to do it. The older style is put the position number in front of the number of carbons. So butane would be this compound if we had four carbons. The ane ending we drop and we turn it into butanol. In fact, only the E gets dropped because the ane part says that we only have single bonds present. The alcohol is at the one position, so yes, this could be named 1-butanol, or the newer way to do it is to put the position number right before where the functional group is. So butane 1-ol. Why is it 1? Because you number the chain from the point of the most important functional group. In this case, we only have one functional group in the, on the molecule, so that automatically establishes where to number. We'll do a couple of examples of polyfunctional molecules in just a moment. The second molecule, we still would number to give that functional group as low a number as possible. So this would give us the molecule 2-butanol or butane 2-ol. I prefer the newer style, but if you correctly do the older style, you won't be marked wrong. And in fact, most texts or most chemicals are still labeled the old way, but you will see this new method as well. There's a couple of cases where you don't need the position numbers. For example, there is no such thing as ethane 2-ol, because from either end, if you try to number it, the only way that you give the lowest number is to give the alcohol position 1. So that case, it's just ethanol. No numbers, just like the one carbon would be methanol. There's one more case that you could lump together, and that's if you have only one functional group on a cyclic molecule. That functional group automatically gets position 1, so this would just be cyclohexanol. Questions about these simpler alcohols? Then let's see when we have more than one alcohol present. So which end would we number from in this case? From the right. Why? Because we get the number 1. If we started from the left, then the first alcohol we encounter would get the number 2 instead. Well, 1 is lower than 2, so we pick the route that gives us the lowest number, the first possible place. So 1, 2, 3, 4. But we have a stereo center, don't we? RS. R, correct. Now, that question you're still going to be asked this quarter. So if you're a little rusty on your R's and S's, get those molecular modeling kits back out and start practicing again. But yes, this is R. Why? Because the oxygen of the alcohol is the most important thing at that stereocenter. The carbon chain to the right is a carbon chain versus just the plain methyl group on the left. So priority... Oh, wait. Sorry. I'm all happy about this. So priority 1, 2, 3. So then this is R. Now, there are no other substituents, so we would name the main part of the molecule. This is a diol, though, isn't it? So notice, butane. You keep the A-N part of the word because that means that it is fully saturated. The common mistake is to do something like butadiol, not even put the ane in there. But the ane part for an alcohol never goes away. It can change, as we'll see in another example in a moment. Now that E is there because we're about to put a consonant afterwards. And I know that's really an obscure rule, but one you should be familiar with. And I'm going to still need a while to get used to this screen, so yell as you always do when I go off the bottom of the paper. Consonant. Where are the alcohols located? Well, they're at positions 1 and 3. Now, notice that since we only had one stereocenter, we did not actually need to put a position number for that stereocenter. It's automatically understood. And then we round this off with a diol. The di is because of 2 alcohols. One last example, and then we need to get to some mechanisms. What if we had an alkene and an alcohol at the same time? And I'll make this a simple example where we don't have E or Z or cis or trans possible for the alkene because it's at the end of the molecule. And I also made it where we have no stereocenter. So which end do we number from, the left or the right? Why? Alcohol is a more important functional group than any carbon-based functional group. So alcohols are more important than alkanes, alkenes, or alkynes. So therefore, we're going to give 1 to the alcohol and 4 to the alkene. Alcohol more important. There are no substituents, so we name the parent as it is. This is pent. But it's not a pentane. So here we're going to switch to ene. Why? Because we have an alkene. Pent, 4, ene, 1, all. Questions? Oh, sorry. It says the alcohol is more important. There's no monitor here, unfortunately. That's a much clearer scanner than we used to have, isn't it? That's cool. Last chance for questions before we move on to a few mechanisms now. All right, well, before we get to the mechanisms, let's remind ourselves, why is it that alcohols are poor substrates for nucleophilic substitution and elimination? Because the hydroxide that would turn into if we could kick the OH group off, that's basic. And good leaving groups are conjugate bases of strong acids. Water's not a strong acid at all. It's a neutral compound. So in other words, OH doesn't want to come off a molecule. And that's why we want to make, if we want to make alcohols useful in one way, we want to turn it into a leaving group. So first reaction, let's start with SOCl2, which is the compound thionyl chloride. Has this structure to it. The thionyl is the sulfur equivalent of the carbonyl. The most missed thing about thionyl chloride is the lone pair that goes on the sulfur. Now, where do you think the most reactive portion of this molecule is? The double bond between sulfur and oxygen. And out of those two atoms, which one do you think is going to be most likely to react with an alcohol? Well, what does an alcohol have that we want to react? So there's the hydrogen on an alcohol, which we're going to get back into acidity later on the quarter, but alcohols have a pKa range of roughly 16 to 18, which is a little less acidic than water, but almost equivalent to water. But aside from the hydrogen that's on there, there's the lone pair on the oxygen itself, isn't it? And the oxygen of the alcohol, is that going to be partially negatively charged or partially positively charged? Why negative? Electronegativity. Oxygen's more electronegative. It's greedy. It would have more electron density. If oxygen's got electron density, then what about this thionyl chloride? What could you say about the sulfur and electron density? It's partially positive. It's partially very positive because it's got three quite electronegative atoms around it. In fact, that's the rationalization to explain the first step of the reaction that will occur. Now, there's different ways to show this mechanism step. I'm going to show you the easy way, and then we'll get more into the story later. I'm taking a little while getting ramped up here this morning. Don't want to run out of time. But let me do at least point out, that again, that the sulfur is very delta positive, and then the oxygen is delta negative. So the oxygen, in other words, would be acting as the nucleophile, and then the sulfur would be acting as the electrophile. So oxygen attacks the sulfur-oxygen double bond, which, because of that, the sulfur-oxygen double bond is going to open up. Now, we can argue later about whether that is its own individual step or whether there's actually a cascade event that occurs. For simplicity's sake, for right now, I'm going to say, imagine that bond opens up, but then collapses right back down. Because you would push that bond open, leaving a negative charge on oxygen, with it having nowhere else to go. If that negative charge were to come collapse right back down, chlorine's a good leaving group. And so it makes sense that chlorine would be kicked off at this point. Now, couldn't I just write a mechanism where I show the alcohol directly kicking chlorine off? I could, but there is some evidence of this bond opening and closing going on. Again, it's a topic for later. But here's the way I'm going to represent it for now. Essentially, kind of looks like, but it's not the same as, an SN2 reaction. Leonardo, you had a question.
Oh, I just want to ask the upper row, is it from S to O or from double bond to O?
Double bond?
Is it from double bond to O or from S to O?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, it should be from the double bond there. Thank you. And what we would end up with is an oxonium ion, which, if you're not familiar with that term, that means positively charged oxygen, which any time that we start out with a neutral oxygen, that's the situation we're going to end up with. So let me point that out. Positive charge on oxygen is oxonium ion. Usually when we have these types of oxonium ions, we have a very rapid deprotonation because a positive charge on oxygen is not favorable. And so a hydrogen stuck in oxygen like that is usually as acidic as something like sulfuric acid. So that comes off. And we end up with this intermediate, which then continues to react, because this whole thing that we just formed is a leaving group. And since chloride is still around in solution, and because of the way the reaction is performed, that chloride is going to come back and attack the leaving group as it's formed. And so here's the sequence of steps that happens there. Chlorine attacks the leaving group. That bond will end up swinging around towards the sulfur. Again, we can have that same opening and closing occur. And again, chlorine can get kicked off. Showing this complete set of steps is important because part of the driving force for this reaction is for the formation of sulfur dioxide. It's forming carbon dioxide, sulfur dioxide, and diatomic nitrogen are usually three very thermodynamically favorable events. So because you form SO2 as a byproduct here, that's partly what drives this reaction along. So you'll end up with an alkyl chloride, and then, again, SO2 as a byproduct. Now, let's briefly go over the reaction conditions, or those six things that we need to know about. What is the synthetic utility? Well, to make an alcohol into an alkyl chloride. What are the reagents? Thionyl chloride is the main reagent. We'll later get into discussion of some other things to throw in here to help the reaction along. Particularly, there's some bases we could use to help pull the hydrogens out. What are the conditions? Needs to be done without water. It needs to be anhydrous, because water would cause the thionyl chloride to decompose. Water's like an alcohol, and so it would just merrily react with the thionyl chloride in the same way an alcohol would. The mechanism that you have up above here. So let's skip to regiochemistry. Yes. Regiochemistry, none, you could say. It ends up substituting at the same position where the alcohol was originally. Stereochemistry. That's an interesting consideration. Because look at, for a moment, at the first step of the reaction. I did not show a chiral starting material here. But does anything happen to the carbon-oxygen bond in the first step of this reaction? Does anything happen to the carbon-oxygen bond during the first step of this reaction? No, just the oxygen attacks sulfur, correct?
Yeah.
But the link that oxygen had with carbon never changed. So if you had a stereo center to begin with, it would be the same configuration. The hydrogen comes off. That has nothing to do with carbon. So again, the configuration wouldn't change. But what about that last step? That's an SN2 reaction, isn't it? Chlorine displacing that leaving group simultaneously. Yeah, there's some other arrows that go on after that, but really, it's just a fancy version of an SN2 reaction. What happens stereochemically in an SN2 reaction? And so the stereochemistry for this reaction is inversion of configuration. That's an extraordinarily important realization, because if we had some kind of chiral alcohol, so, new students, deuterium is one of my favorite atoms because I can use it to keep something still having a primary center but be a stereo center, just like what I've done here. So, important consideration, thionyl chloride, we'll convert it into a leaving group, but with inversion of configuration. What if we didn't want that, though? What if we wanted the ability to keep the configuration? Because let's say that I want to, after making the alkyl halide, react it with something like sodium azide, put yet another nucleophile on there. And let's say only at that point I wanted to invert stereochemistry. Well, it turns out there's a reagent we could use to do that. A reagent that eventually you'll learn how to synthesize. Does this look familiar to any of you all? Yes. It's tosyl chloride. Remember, we talked about tosylates as leaving groups in an SN2 reaction or SN1 reaction last quarter. This will react with an alcohol to make a tosylate. So this full name is para-toluene sulfonyl chloride, or tosyl chloride for short. It has the simpler cousin, methyl sulfonyl chloride. Which, does anybody remember the short name for methyl sulfonyl? Mesyl, yes. This is mesyl chloride. In general, these are sulfonyl chlorides. And in principle, any of them could do this type of reaction I'm going to show you. It just happens that tosyl chloride is very widely used because it's an easily handled, relatively safe solid. Inexpensive as well. Smells kind of like a can of peanuts. I don't know why, I guess the sulfur in it. Mesyl chloride, similar, except it's a liquid. There's some cases where it might be preferred. Usually I'll show this reaction using a tosyl chloride, though. So how does the reaction work? Well, again, not to get too much into argument about mechanism at this point, it's going to happen very much like the mechanism for sulfonyl chloride. And so, yes, in OCHEM, there's an awful lot of memorization, but it really helps you to find patterns, and particularly this quarter. Because maybe last quarter, when we were just learning about alkenes and alkynes, it all seemed pretty random, the different types of reactions that we're learning. But many, many of the reactions we do this quarter are all focused around carbon-oxygen single bonds, or even more so, carbon-oxygen double bonds. And that carbon-oxygen double bond in particular has two main ways it reacts, with a cationic mechanism or an anionic mechanism. Many of the cationic mechanisms look like each other. Many of the anionic mechanisms look like each other. And same type of thing is going on here. Sulfur-oxygen bond reacts in a way that a carbon-oxygen bond would. You could have a cationic mechanism or an anionic. Point being, don't just memorize, try to find the commonalities. So in fact, let's see the first step of reaction with an alcohol. And this time, I'll start out using a chiral alcohol so we can see right away what the stereochemical consequences would be. I'll use tosyl chloride, and I'll write the full structure out. There is an abbreviation for tosyl chloride that can be used that I would prefer not to use in this case, but just to be complete about it. What I have circled here is abbreviated TS. So this compound could be written as TSCl. I'm not doing it in this case because then I wouldn't be able to fully see what happens mechanistically. So, same type of thing is going to happen as what we saw with the sulfonyl chloride, because the sulfur-oxygen bond is very, very, very polarized in this case as it was previously. Same type of thing I'm going to do then. Show this opening up and then collapsing back down. Again, kicking off a halide once that occurs. What will we get? Well, just as we saw above, we'll initially get an oxonium. Which then will deprotonate. But usually, when this reaction is performed, there's some kind of base that's included which helps sop up the hydrogens that would get pulled off at this point. And When a base that's neutral like that combines with hydrogen, that means it becomes positively charged. Chloride would end up being the counter ion. So, in other words, by including a base along with this reaction, you prevent the chloride from coming back and attacking in this case. So the reaction stops here. Like I said, we will see more about bases later on, so let me just write that as a note for the moment. Due to the inclusion of a base to remove H+, chloride ends up also effectively being removed from the reaction. So in other words, you don't go past the formation of this tosylate. Notice what's happened, though. We have retention of configuration. Because the carbon-oxygen bond never got involved at all, because we didn't have that chlorine come back to attack. So thionyl chloride, it's done under in a way so that it encourages the chlorine to come back and attack, and that's how we end up with an alkyl chloride. Here we do it in such a way that it prevents the chloride reacting, and that's why we don't have the secondary attack, and we end up with instead with a tosylate. There are two more reactions we need to cover. One main one involving phosphorus tribromide. That'll be the first mechanism that we cover on Wednesday. We'll do it very quickly because it's even simpler than the mechanism with thionyl chloride. The last thing we need to see is how to make an alkyl iodide, which it's not mentioned in your text, but you actually did it in a sense last quarter when you did the comparative rates of different SN1, SN2 reactions. And this will be something called the Finkelstein reaction, if you wanted to go look that up online. Now, Leonardi, you had a question. That is the end of the reaction. So in this case, SN1 is not possible because it's primary. But even if we did this with a secondary alcohol, the next part of the reaction still wouldn't happen. These tosylates are able to be isolated. Now, we are out of time. Are there any last questions, though? Yes?
So when the oxygen replaces the chlorine?
Yes.
The chlorine it's just being replaced. It's not being eliminated, or is it?
It's being replaced. The question was asked, the chlorine that's on that sulfur group, is something happening to it? Yes, it's simply being kicked out. So it's not an elimination reaction. It's something that you would call a substitution. Hello? A substitution elimination reaction. It's a different. It's a slight variation on substitution, though, and we're going to see much more of it later in the quarter. So we are out of time. Section 2, I'll see you in lab. Everybody else, I'll see you. Section 1, again, Wednesday morning.